Welcome to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Decker. This podcast is dedicated to providing my books in full, unabridged audio format. Look for new episodes every Tuesday. Now, on with the show. Hello, and welcome back to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. This week, we are continuing to read Blood Games. Last week, we read. A black sedan came around the corner and headed in my direction. The front windshield was tinted. I could also tell from the buzzing that the drone was almost overhead. The helicopter was no longer in sight, so perhaps that had been somebody else. When I heard screeching tires behind me, I didn't look to see who was coming. I broke into a run and disappeared down the first alley on my right. And now, episode 23. I came to a halt as soon as I turned. It was a dead end. Muttering a curse, I flipped around and saw the car had pulled up right outside the alleyway and that the front doors were opening. Rushing towards the driver, I grabbed him by the arm, yanking him all the way out and ramming him up against the car while putting my pistol to the side of his head. "Back away if you want him to live," I said to the woman getting out of the other side of the car. Because it was Daigon chasing me, I had expected to recognize them from my time with Black Brick, but I did not. The man I held at gunpoint looked familiar, but I was having a difficult time placing him. He hadn't worked at Black Brick, I was certain of that, but I couldn't say how I knew him. "Back off," the man said to the woman with a frown on his face that didn't show much fear. He looked me in the eyes. "It doesn't have to go this way." "Who are you?" I demanded. "What do you want?" "Easy," said the dark-haired woman as she moved to come around from the other side of the car, thinking she was gaining something by getting closer to me. She had her hand at her side as if it rested on a holstered pistol. "Just calm down." Her voice sounded familiar, so I took a closer look while jabbing my gun into the man's neck. "You're the woman who almost chased me down." She had had blonde hair back then. The dark color suited her far better. The blonde had looked fake, and while she'd been attractive before, she was now stunning. It was a struggle to take my eyes off her, even while she glared at me. "You're from Data Raider," I said, ripping my eyes away as I thought about how close things had been that day. If it hadn't been for Chris, she might have caught me. Either Data Raider had tracked me after I'd left Reed's home, or Daigon had sold me out. I was willing to bet on the latter. But the former was just as plausible. They probably had a GPS tracker in the Suburban I had abandoned. It clicked and I realized why they hadn't bothered to chase me. There had not been a need. She smiled, one and the same. The grin disappeared. "Go ahead and shoot him. We can afford the loss." I licked my lips, picking up on her game immediately. She was testing to see if I had become a cold-blooded killer. I wondered if she'd heard about the men I'd killed back at Reed's place. Part of me almost pulled the trigger just to call her bluff and show her I wasn't a man to be fooled with. "Stop," the man calmly said. "Nobody has to get hurt." Knowing he was from Data Raider made something else click, and I realized he had been there the night Reed had first tried to recruit me. He'd been one of the executives that had heard my story. I ignored him as I considered my best course of action while taking a deep breath and looking around. I had heard squealing tires coming from the other direction, but if the car had been with them, it was nowhere to be seen now. Perhaps the other driver had thought to go around and cut me off, not realizing it was a dead end. It was just the two of them, and the woman had taken advantage of my apparent hesitation to come even closer. It was now or never. When I pulled the trigger, the man shouted and she gasped, lunging towards me and making things even easier. While I kneed him in the groin, I brought my gun around and knocked her upside the head. It saddened me to risk marring such a beauty, but it had to be done. She brought up a pistol that I snatched and flung back into the alley as I pushed her onto the hood of the car. Lucky for the man, I knew my trigger pull intimately, and while it had looked like I'd been about to kill him, I had pushed it to the point of tension and no further. If I had taken the trigger past that, his brains would have been all over the car. He was still in shock. so I took advantage of his confusion to throw him headfirst into a brick wall. After that, I hopped into the car and had slammed the door shut before I realized the keys weren't in the ignition, as I had supposed. I had grabbed the man so fast I had thought he'd left the engine running. Growling, I made it look like I was going to hotwire the car, something that was unlikely considering how new it was, and waited for the woman to get right outside my door. I pushed it open into her as I burst out of it. She had managed to find her gun, so I pushed her arm away from me as it went off, exploding several feet from my ear. The bullet went through the rear passenger window and into the back seat. I grabbed for the gun, but she was too quick and snaked away. I pounced on her, elbowing her in the face and throwing her onto the hood of the car. When I felt the cold muzzle of a pistol pushed into my neck, I stepped back into it. Perhaps I acted without thinking, because the man hadn't struck me as a killer, or maybe I didn't care if he killed me. The pistol was no longer against my neck as I spun and pushed the man back against the car while snatching away his gun and jamming my own handgun back into his neck. As the woman stood, I realized we were back where we had started. "I can go like this all day," I said, smiling while taking a deep breath. For all the effort, I wasn't gasping for breath. "Can you?" The man's forehead was bleeding, and his nose was scuffed up. When the woman stood, she pointed her pistol at me. Something about the way her eyes narrowed and the set of her mouth helped me understand she wouldn't hesitate to pull the trigger. It dawned on me that between the two of them, she was younger and in better shape. The man was frumpy, sagged in the middle, and looked like he spent most of his time behind a desk. Perhaps Reed had mobilized everybody. The woman growled, "Unless you're going to kill him this time, surrender." The anger in her voice made me smile. There was something about an angry woman. Perhaps that was what had drawn me towards Shannon. She was always brooding about something. Maybe it had been my innate need to solve her problems that had brought us together. It also hadn't hurt that Beltran had assigned her as my partner, and we'd spent countless hours together. I took a step back while keeping the pistol pointed at the man, preparing to shoot him. He must have been able to see it in my eyes. "Don't do this to yourself," he said. There was an earnestness to his words that made me think he was trying to think of things from my perspective. His words caught me off guard. I would have expected him to beg for his life, but he had not. It struck me as odd, but he looked sincere in what he had said. Something about his manner made me think of Sister Bautista. My finger tightened on the trigger. There would be no bluffing this time. If I did it, I would do it for real. A bead of perspiration trickled down the side of my head. The whisper of a breeze licked up against it, cooling my face. Time seemed to slow as I wondered if I was willing to pull the trigger. My finger came towards me until it once again reached the point of no return. The woman expected me to do it, and so did he. I looked into the man's eyes, and while I was beginning to see fear behind his eyes, I saw something else. He was no killer. However Reed had got this man to do his bidding, he wasn't like Sam and did not deserve to die. "Hand me your gun," I said to the woman. "What makes you think I'm going to do that? His death will be a loss to those who know him. He's not like us. I don't want this burden, but I will pick it up." I looked her in the eye, and while most of the blame will lie with me, are you going to be able to forgive yourself? My words were getting through to her even though she made no move to lower her weapon. She too felt bad for the harm she had caused. I could see it written on her face as easily as I read the guilt within my own heart. "If you recognize the situation so well," she said, "lower your weapon." I shrugged, giving the man an apologetic look. I tried. During the conversation, my trigger finger had moved forward, so I pulled it back to where it had been. Apparently, she hadn't realized my finger had slipped. "No," she cried. "Stop!" She held her hands out to the side. The gun no longer pointed at me. Stuffing the man's pistol into my pocket, I grabbed hers. "You would have done it, wouldn't you?" she asked. I told the truth. "Yes." I let that sink in as I frisked them both and pocketed their keys. Her ID, his wallet, and both cell phones. Using duct tape from my messenger bag, I taped up their hands and feet and left them in the alley. As I got into the car, I took one last look before shutting the door and driving away. I didn't tape up their mouths because I wanted them to get free. I wasn't sure about the neighborhood and figured that things would go better for them if they freed themselves sooner than later. Perhaps if the other car came back for them, it would find them. I pulled the car into the road and headed towards the mall. Okay, that is the end of the Blood Games reading we are going to do today. And now we're going to switch over to reading from Monkey House. This is Chapter 7. As Reggie lost hold of the window on account of having his head obliterated by my axe, I ripped out my weapon and pushed him out, catching another glimpse of the King Kong-sized brute. I tried to process what I had just done and found I was unable to do so. Early in my legal career, before I'd focused on litigation, I'd worked for the prosecutor's office for a couple of years. During that time, I'd seen it all and come away with a deep understanding of the way the criminal mind worked. For the most part, criminals were stupid, acting out of anger or recklessness. As I watched Reggie's body slip through the window and hit the ground with a thud, I suddenly understood what it had been like for all those people who had committed crimes while in the heat of passion. I hadn't meant to act. I'd moved on instinct, never realizing what I was doing. Not that what I'd just done was at all similar to a man who murdered his wife and her lover. I just understood a bit better. That flash of insight came and left in the blink of an eye as a new creature replaced Reggie's perch in the window, forcing me to back up. He smiled. It wasn't the mocking grin of Reggie. It was far more malevolent. Strangely, he didn't seem bothered by the death of his companion. "Put down the weapon, fleshbag, and I'll make sure your death is swift and painful." I recognized Speedy by his voice. I moved to swing my axe, but the creature shifted so he could catch it. I tried to pull out of the swing, and while I was able to keep the monster from grabbing hold of it, I embedded my axe right into my wife's grandfather clock. Shattered glass and metal went everywhere. I shivered with fear, but it wasn't the creature. It was the reaction I knew I'd receive when my wife saw what I had done. Another creature hopped up into the other window, bashed it in, and while latching on, started kicking out the remaining glass. Each move was deliberate, unlike Reggie, who initially burst through the window in one motion without regard for his own safety. Petey laughed without moving from the window as I tried to pull out the axe, but could not. "Fool, fool, fool!" He looked at Becker and made no further move to come towards me. The other one stopped breaking the glass to look at me with cold eyes when I swore and tried again to remove the axe. Wishing we were in a courtroom and they were at the witness stand, I made another attempt and was finally able to pull my axe free, bringing with it large chunks of the gear mechanism. When I brought up the axe, I noticed their blood was black. Petey continued to point and laugh. Becker, perhaps encouraged by my successful attack, barked at an increasing volume, and kept approaching the creature but then backing away. The twisted ape nodded at Becker. "Dumb animal. All it can say is one thing." It clung to the window and peered down at Becker like a cat, and barked back at it between intermittent laughter. "Fuzzball," I said, "what do they want?" No answer. I waved to catch Fuzzball's attention. "Hey, Fuzzball, what do they want?" Fuzzball frowned. "Hey, fleshbag, my name is Eugene." "Whatever," I said, impatient. "Why are they here?" Fuzzball shook his head and didn't say anything more. Despite his insistence that his name was Eugene, I decided he was going to always be Fuzzball to me, though I'd be careful about what I called him. Yes, it was immature, but considering everything I had just experienced, I needed to make some attempts to take control of the situation, even by something as simple as a name. The second brutish monkey broke off several more pieces of glass, and rather than hanging in the window, he jumped in, landing on his feet. His arms were long enough that his knuckles could indeed drag on the ground. "Well, well, Eugene," he said, "what a mess you've created." The creature's voice was calm and more deliberate. Whereas Reggie had seemed more animal than man, I could sense intelligence in this one that was lacking from the other two. Fuzzball quivered. "Things are different than we've been told. Caldwell is lying to us, Jimmy. She is not telling the truth." Jimmy frowned. "About what?" "Everything. It's all a lie. There is no place called Farland. We didn't come from there. She created all of us. She..." "Come now, Eugene," Jimmy said. "Why would she lie? She's nothing to gain by telling untruths." Jimmy glanced at me. "Human. We want Eugene. Let us take him and we will leave you in peace." The other let out a cackling laugh, but Jimmy ignored it. I didn't trust the offer, not for a moment. Eugene is under my protection, I said. You will leave my property at once, or I will call the sheriff. A sly smile crept onto Jimmy's face. You think the sheriff can help you? His smile grew, showing sharp brown teeth that seemed to take up all of his mouth. Yes, let's do call him. Please proceed. The utter calmness with which the creature spoke filled me with dread. He reminded me of Scott Pearson, the only worthy foe I'd had back in the city. Pearson and I had squared off many times, and he'd always conducted himself with calm. Ruthless calm. Jimmy's demeanor made it easier to get back into my courtroom frame of mind, something I had lost when I thought about attacking Petey. His only intellectual ability seemed to be a keen wickedness that emanated from him, like the foul odor these creatures had brought into my home. Instead of attacking, I rested the axe on my shoulder. It took every ounce of my resolve. Jimmy frowned, but did not respond. I had a feeling if I took out the dumb one, Jimmy wouldn't react or even care. Perhaps it wasn't a bad idea to knock off another while they didn't seem worried. I gripped the shaft of the axe tighter. Jimmy, can I call you that? I waited long enough for the creature to nod. Let's be reasonable about this, shall we? Eugene has made a claim, and seeing as how you haven't tried to forcibly take him yet, it seems you too may also have your doubts about this Dr. Caldwell. How about we hear Eugene out? Let's let him explain why he believes you've been created, and then you can tell why you think you've been brought here from another world. You see, in a former life, I was a trial attorney. I'll listen to both your stories and give you my thoughts. Let's see if we can figure this out. Jimmy stared at me, his eyes dark black orbs. Perhaps that is not a terrible idea. Petey made an exasperated sound. We're not really going to do this, are we? Does it matter where we came from? Dr. Caldwell takes care of us, gives us food, provides entertainment. Quiet, Petey, Jimmy said. I like this proposal. I would very much like to hear this man's perspective on our situation. Petey made a face that I could only describe as something I'd seen on my own children after I'd forbidden them from doing something. It seemed to be a universal expression among the self-aware. We don't have time for this, he said. Jimmy growled, his first overt display of emotion. We need to know if Eugene knows something. He nodded at me. This fellow seems reasonable. Never mind the fact that I just split Reggie's face in two, I thought, but did not say. For some reason, they didn't appear to value one another. I didn't understand why. Fuzzball had inched away from his corner while the exchange had taken place. He stopped moving when both Jimmy and Petey looked at him, their eyes narrowing like predators looking at their next meal. And perhaps they were. Fuzzball froze. Seems a fair offer to me, he said. All right, well, that is it for this week. Tune in next week for another episode of the Dan Decker Books Podcast.
That's it for this week. I hope you have enjoyed the show. Tune in next week for another installment of the Dan Decker Books Podcast. One last thing before you go. Sign up for my newsletter at dandeckerbooks.com, and you will receive a free ebook copy of War of the Fathers. The text, audio, and music for this show are all copyrighted by Dan Decker. All rights reserved. This podcast is published by Xander Revolutions, LLC.